From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Our next guest is entrepreneur, researcher, and advocate Maxine Beda. She's written a new book called Unraveled, The Life and Death of a Garment. It's the story of a pair of jeans from cotton farm to landfill. It's also the story, the human story, of our global economy, how it got this way, and its heartbreaking toll on the world's disadvantaged. And she has a vision for a better way and practical steps to achieve it for individuals, companies, and policymakers. Maxine will take us inside the factories and warehouses that companies wish would stay hidden. She'll show us how industry fuels environmental and social inequality all over the world. She joins us now. Maxine, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm really excited to hear you discuss this topic because I think it's something that we all have in the back of our heads that we ought not buy cheap clothing, and yet it's so tempting. Why shouldn't we buy that fast fashion?
Well, it has an enormous environmental and social toll, and that's really the starting point, is that this disposable relationship that we've developed with clothing has really only happened in my generation. H&M opened when I was in college in the U.S. for the first time. And so from thousands of years where we tended to our clothing and we thought about growing our wardrobes over time, we've gotten to a place where today, as surveys out of UK, 1 in 3 young women consider clothing old after wearing it once or twice. But it has climate impact implications, labor implications, chemical implications, plastic pollution implications, and it's all because of this very disposable relationship with our clothes.
Now, you say that we consume or we purchase and maybe wear or maybe not wear some 4 times more clothes than we did in the 1960s. Did I get that right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, talk to us about that. I mean, as you say, fast fashion came into being, since you've been alive. And we used to choose very wisely the clothes that we purchased because they were expensive. We spent some 10% of our salary on clothes, but only 25 items a year. Does that include socks and underwear?
I think it might. Yes, we've really changed our relationship to clothing. And before we feel this deep level of guilt, I think it's important to understand what also has changed in that time. 50 years ago, and that's before I was born, people were exposed to about 500 ads a day. Today, they're exposed to over 10,000 ads a day. And so we're getting, these messages, these cues, psychologists would say, these cues to make purchases so much more than we were before. And so it's really tapping into, our animal instincts to make these purchases and get this kind of quick endorphin rush from, the high of the purchase. But, what we're not told, and what I've tried to tell in the story in the book is the consequences that relationship to clothing has, not just on the planet and the people making it, but on us too. I got to speak to psychologists about just how stressful and anxiety inducing talking about mental health month, the really devastating consequences it has on us, the consuming public.
I hope as all of us are listening to you share the passion you have about this industry, we're all listening and looking at our clothes and asking how long each of our articles of clothes have been with us. My question is for us is, what has changed, our relationship with the clothes or the clothes' relationship with us? And the reason I say that way, because you've emphasized the social media aspect of it, the change in which we've consumed the clothes, but I feel also that there's been some, you know, degradation of the clothing. They no longer last as long. Which one is it, or is it both?
It's both. I think it's a great question. You know, our relationship to clothing has changed in that it's become more disposable, and the quality of the clothing has also declined. I think, you know, if you look at a chart of the rise of fast fashion, it parallels the rise of synthetic materials in our clothing. And so for, you know, millennia, we dressed in, fibers that came from a farm or a ranch, whether that was cotton, silk, linen, you know, wool from sheep, to today where over 50% of our clothing is synthetic, is polyester. And what I think, most people don't realize is that polyester is fossil fuel based, and it's a plastic. So when we, you know, talk about the plastic pollution kind of crisis, a significant part of that is from our own clothing. So it's both, you know, our relationship to clothes and the clothing relationship to us as well.
So would it be better to buy something polyester that lasts longer per se, or an organic wool cotton that has no polyester or synthetic materials into it?
I think, you know, ultimately, the way in which I recommend approaching purchases is to really get the thing that you're going to love the most, because the biggest driver of reduction in impact is how long we're actually wearing a garment. And so I'm not advocating, you know, that we should wear bathing suits made out of wool. Like, I can see that there are places, you know, in which synthetics are appropriate. But, you know, the big driver of their use recently is just how cheap they are. And so I think, you know, this whole process for me actually started in my own closet. You know, I spent most of my adult life in New York in these small apartments, and my closet was overflowing with clothing, and yet I had nothing to wear. And I at one stage just stopped and said, you know, really dove into my own closet and looked at the tags and tried to understand what are the things that I like and what do I not like, and, you know, what did that mean in terms of the material and where they were from. And what I noticed is that the stuff that I enjoyed wearing, even today, I'm wearing a wool cotton blend top and cotton jeans, were, you know, natural fibers. They just feel better. And so I think that in terms of navigating those decisions is really, you know, it's an invitation to love our clothing again and not feel the pressures that all of these, you know, ads and cues from, you know, advertisers or influencers or celebrities to, you know, keep consuming.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we are speaking with Maxine Beda. She has written a new book called Unraveled, The Life and Death of a Garment. And I'm wondering, Maxine, if you could go over until I picked up your book, I did not know that linen was made from flax. I had no idea where it came from. But could you go sort of through, if we're looking at carbon footprint, for example, you know, between wool, polyester made, you know, ultimately from coal, linen made from flax, cotton, obviously made from cotton. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The environmental impact?
Yes.
Yeah, so I first just have to tell a little funny story, because you said you didn't know that linen came from flax. Well, Europeans, when they first kind of came in contact with cotton, they didn't know what cotton was. They knew what linen was because they grew it. And so there are these drawings. They thought it was like an animal plant. So they had this like plant with a little like ram's head on top. So I think, you know, many of us don't know what our fibers actually are. But in terms of the environmental footprint of our clothing, it starts at the farm. You know, and the intense chemical use that cotton, conventional cotton, is using today, and that's having serious implications on the soil health in our agricultural system, as well as the runoff of these chemicals into our river systems as well, rivers and oceans. And then you go through from the cotton farm to the actual textile mill. When we think about the climate impacts of fashion, it's really at this textile mill. And fashion represents between 4% and over 8% of all greenhouse gas emissions globally. Even on the conservative estimate, that 4%, that's more than France, the United Kingdom, and Germany combined. Wow. And the reason is that taming these fibers and putting them in the same direction and spinning them into yarn and weaving them into the textile and dyeing them and finishing them into the properties that we want, whether it's, you know, being wrinkle resistant, takes enormous amounts of energy. And we're doing this in countries like China that have a coal-based energy grid, so the most impactful form of energy. And then, of course, we're not wearing these garments often, so we just keep going through that process. Because of the polyester and the rise of polyester and synthetics, we're having a mass impact on the microplastic pollution globally. I think one load of laundry can produce up to 700,000 microfibers in a single load. So that's, you know, another enormous impact. And the chemicals are not being managed because we're creating this kind of race to the bottom, the lowest environmental protections and labor protections, and so the chemicals are not being regulated and they're ending up in the rivers. So it's the landfill, which also has its other environmental implications as well. So it's an enormously resource intensive industry, and that's, you know, what I wanted to get across in this book, so we begin to at least see it so that we can start to change our relationship to it.
Right. Before we get into the social aspects, I wanted to ask, you have this amazing statistics comparing the carbon footprint of the garment industry to airline travel.
I'm trying to remember what that statistic was.
I listened to your TED talk, which is incredible. But maybe better said, the garment industry, as far as I have, my understanding is that it's only second to, you know, the way we power all of our vehicles, the fossil fuel industry, in terms of carbon footprint. Does that sound right?
Yeah, so it's a very hard statistic to nail down. And I think part of the challenge in this space is that we don't, when I talk about the environmental impact being anywhere but between 4% and 8%, those are huge differences. But there hasn't been enough research in this space, independent research, to really nail these things down. But I think one very scary piece of research that came out was finding that if we don't change this system, that our clothing will represent over 25% of our entire global carbon budget by 2050. So it's taking, if you think about all the other industries, taking up an enormous amount of our natural resources, all for something that doesn't make us terribly happy.
So as far as, not making us feel really happy, you kind of did some grassroots spying or investigative reporting, I guess, as we should say, and you went in as a buyer and shared this story. And I think that's what makes your book unique in that you went on the ground level. Can you share what your experience was, what you saw, smelled, maybe not tasted, but so that we can kind of get a little inside peek?
Yeah, so I did some investigative reporting, and I think that story that you're mentioning is from China, looking at the textile mill. So, of course, I received an invitation to come to, a real 5-star facility, a company really on their A game. I was not invited, open invitation to kind of your average textile mill in China. So I posed as a buyer, I was pregnant at the time, and I wasn't wearing makeup, and I think my general innocence benefited me in that situation, in that I just asked very, naively. I've never seen this process, I'd be so curious, you know, can you show it to me? And that's what got me in. And what I saw there, you know, was really devastating. You know, I think we think about sweatshops and these, you know, bad conditions, you know, that they were things in the 90s, but we just talked about them more in the 90s. They haven't gone away. And so there were just, you know, this was a denim finishing facility, and there were just dyes sloshing on the floor. And luckily I was wearing rubber-soled shoes because it was just awash in dyes. People spraying, you know, known carcinogens without face masks. And then, you know, upon leaving that facility and just walking behind it, it was along a river, I saw the chemicals from that wash house just dumped straight into that river. And the really devastating thing is, you know, you hear this gurgling of these chemicals, and it's this, you know, black flow of chemicals onto an already very dark gray river. And then, you know, I walked down that river, and these were all, you know, alongside agricultural plots that, you know, were using that water, you know, to grow the products. And so then I went back and did the desk research on just the implications of the people consuming that food, using that as a water source. And it's really devastating. So, you know, the rivers smell acrid. They look black. And, you know, the chemicals are just sloshing about without regulation.
It's horribly heartbreaking. And the reality of it is the demand is warranting the necessity of those conditions. And what does that make you as an individual walk away with in how you purchase, and what is it that we can do?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the big thrust of the book is actually that we have so much more power in this than we are led to believe. And that, you know, there's one chapter really dedicated to this, is that this idea that we see ourselves as consumers is something that was very intentionally manufactured. And there's even a quote in the book, you know, there were business leaders and government leaders, this was during the war period, that were afraid of what the people would do. And so they tried to get us to see ourselves as consumers, as this kind of distraction machine, away from being active citizens in seeing that we have a hand in the policy of our elected government officials. And so we can change the rules, and it doesn't have to be this way. And I think, you know, we developed things like the Environmental Protection Agency. It was garment workers that developed basic labor protections, including the whole concept of the weekend. But when we created this global system, we neglected to include those same protections. And so we can build that back. And that's the work that we're doing now with my day job at the New Standard Institute, is to think about those policies, try to, you know, enact those policies so that it isn't this way, this kind of race to the bottom, but this race to the top where we can all thrive and love the clothing that we're wearing.
So just to wrap up things again, going back to what we can do as consumers, you know, we have a lot of, I think maybe because we're an outdoor industry oriented town and as a ski resort, mm-hmm. we have a lot of I think maybe more concern about this than perhaps the average community. And we have a lot of mm-hmm. companies that are maybe based here or nearby that are outdoor industry or, you know, recreational clothing and that sort of thing. And they tend to brag about, you know, their, you know, both their, how they treat the workers, you know, where the garments are produced, and, you know, what the environmental aspects are of producing their clothing. And that's all really good, but how do you know, how do you know what's real, what's not? You know, what are your tips for how we go through and choose what hangs in our closet?
Yeah, it's very hard to know right now, and there isn't a good way to know. And that's why, you know, that is the reason why this is the policy that we're working on at New Standard Institute. And we really you know, invite support and need support to kind of move the industry to a place where it's not talking about sustainability, but that it disclosing their actual impact, so we can actually tell kind of just marketing from, you know, from real considered efforts. And so, you know, that's where we really need to go, is to use our voices as, you know, consumers of goods and as citizens to demand these type of disclosures, demand that measurable progress is being made. And then in terms of one's own, you know, purchasing, is to just, you know, really love your clothing, and that, you know, will get you to end up, you know, wearing that clothing more. And that's, you know, as I said, the largest driver of resource reduction use is just how much we are wearing our clothing.
Yeah, wearing your clothing and shopping at somewhere like, well, in town here we have the Christian Center that has, you know, a great little boutique, or, you know, the Deseret Industries or wherever else, to, you know, get clothes that are passed down from someone. So many people do that, and we sort of forget that it's a great resource.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Wearing, you know, purchasing a garment that has been pre-loved is a wonderful way of continuing the life of that product. And I think what's cool is that the young generation is seeing that as something that's really cool. It's not, you know, you're not just doing it to do right with the world. It's become the cool thing to do. So I think those are exciting things for the next generation.
The book is Unraveled, The Life and Death of a Garment. Our guest is Maxine Beda. Thank you so much for joining us, Maxine.
Thank you.
And she also has a great TED Talk. It's the way to read a book in 20 minutes. And literally, I was driving here listening to the TED Talk, and I was thinking about my subscription to Stitch Fix. And I was thinking, I got to cancel it. I'm going to cancel it. But it's that's, you know, why she wrote the book, to sort of inspire and educate.
Yeah, and there's some really amazing programs that are being developed, you know, with Patagonia and other companies, where they actually are creating their own version of thrift stores to help with that consumptive kind of ideology that new clothes, you know, we need to get a new ski outfit every year.
Right. Oh,
I just use spray paint.
Sure you do. All right. Well, that again was Maxine Beda.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.